Not all neighborhoods have access to healthy and fresh foods. And coming up now, we're going to be talking with an author and activist about what each person, what you can do, what I can do to strengthen our local food system and supply. Our guest, Allie Berlow, is the author of a couple of books. One of her books, The Mobile Poultry Slaughterhouse, Building a Humane Chicken Processing Unit to Strengthen Your Local Food System. And the book we're going to be talking about today, The Food Activist Handbook, Big and Small Things You Can Do to Help Provide Fresh, Healthy Food for Your Community. Her essay series, A Cook's Notebook, airs periodically on NPR member stations. She was born and raised in Madison, Wisconsin, now living out on the East Coast now.
That's right. I'm on the East Coast.
And is it fun to be back in Madison?
Oh, it's great to be back in Madison. I come here as frequently as I can.
Well, it's great to have you back. And I think most people would agree that access to fresh and healthy food is very important. But what really got your fire up about putting together a book for helping people achieve that goal?
Well, mostly because people started asking me, how did we do it in our community back on the East Coast? And my journey started really when I became a mother. And I looked at the foods that were marketed and targeted towards our children. And then I tried to get informed, and I watched movies like Food, Inc. and Fed Up, which is about sugar. And at that point, then I started feeling defeated that the problems were so big and so immense, and how was I, as one person, going to do anything about it, you know? And that's when I looked locally. I looked to my community, and I gathered a group of people together, really eaters, you know, mm-hmm. not specifically farmers, not specifically fishermen, but eaters. And we asked the question, what can we do to be more sustainable as a community? How can we help support our local farmers, the people that we want to buy the fresh, healthy foods from? And from that, that's where, you know, that was a real turning point for me, being able to feel empowered, look locally, talk to people, some people I knew, some people I didn't. The people that we gathered were from the food bank, grocers, cookbook authors, fishermen, farmers, gardeners, people, you know, and cooks. And asking that question, really, how do we support our local farmers, was a real turning point.
And you have put together here a really wonderful handbook that covers, man, pretty much everything I could think of, please.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it really is a handbook. And, you know, when people first look at it, you know, you don't have to start at page one. You can start on page 32 if that's what interests you. You know, and the index helps you say, I'm interested in school food reform, or I want to engage my house of worship, or let's change the food at the hospitals. How do we do that? And what I did for this book, which is really a culmination of about 10 years of my personal activism and then going out to the good food movement, the people across the country doing information and gleaning information from them to provide for the reader so they can take those first steps.
Boy, I tell you what, you've got some wonderful examples and wonderful straightforward explanations of how to go about doing things.
Thank you.
Really wonderful. Allie Berlow, our guest, the book that we're talking about, The Food Activist Handbook. And you may have, do members of your community have reliable access to fresh and healthy food? If so, what are the sources? What are your experiences? Or what are the obstacles in your own community to this? Do you see solutions in your community that could work in other locations? Or do you want some advice about how to go about working within your community? I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post photos or questions or comments on our Facebook page, and our Facebook page title, The Larry Mehler Show. And we'd certainly love to hear from you. What are some of the most common characteristics of communities that lack access to fresh and healthy food? Are there any?
Lack of farmer's market, great distances to go to a grocer that does actually have fresh, healthy foods. Perhaps that also means the public transportation isn't adequate in order to help people get to those places. You know, food deserts are not a phenomenon that just is an urban situation. It can happen in the rural communities as well. So relocalizing our local grocers, our local greengrocers, butchers, farmers markets, those things can really help not only local economies, because you're giving your dollar directly to perhaps that farmer, but really helping people get access to those foods on a fresh base, on a fresh and seasonal basis.
And it does seem, I think that approach does seem to be gaining favor across the country, and certainly here in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. And I think that's also important to include, make sure that SNAP benefits, the nutritional benefits available through the federal government, that those can be paid out at farmers markets. That's a critical piece. But also,
and that would SNAP, for those who may not be familiar, it's kind of like our used to be called food stamp
program.
Correct.
Yeah. But then also, you know, looking at what are we doing for our booster clubs, for our student athletes and little league programs and houses of worship, Sunday coffees and donuts. Perhaps there's something else there instead of the coffee and donuts, which I love a good donut anytime, but not necessarily as part of a regular diet. But those are ways that we come together as communities, and in those places, how do we continue to encourage the fresh access access to good healthy foods?
Allie Berlew, our guest. We'll take some calls now. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Margaret in Milwaukee up next. Margaret, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to make a comment. This year, one way that my husband and I are trying to eat well without, you know, spending a ton of money is we're doing a worker share with a CSA where we will work on a farm in exchange for a weekly share of vegetables. And it's not, I mean, really, it's a small money savings, but in addition to getting the food, we're also learning how to grow the food and just kind of enjoying some time out in the country, hanging out and, you know, the physical labor of farming.
That's great. And just for the listeners that are not familiar with the CSA, that's Community Supported Agriculture. And those are membership shares that you can buy usually through a farm or as you're doing as a worker, as a participant in growing the food. And it helps the farmer get the money up front access, and then you will get deliveries and or pickups throughout your membership. It's a terrific way to support local food system.
And you're right. It's great to be you're in Milwaukee. It's great to be able to get out of town, and get to the farm and just see what's going on a farm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's terrific. Do you ever get any vegetables in there you're not quite sure what to do with?
Oh yeah. to eat. Yeah, sometimes it's hard to use all the food. Things that I hadn't tried before ever participating in a CSA, I had never tried kohlrabi, which I loved. And I think there's something coming this week that I've never tried. It's like a hybrid of celery and lettuce.
Oh, that sounds delicious. Maybe there could be recipes you could help encourage your CSA use.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I was thinking about Joy Cardine. I think I'm a friend of hers on Facebook, and she had a photo of something from her CSA this morning and said, I'm not sure what this is.
That's right. It's really interesting. A lot of CSAs are also including what would be called as ethnic crops, crops that are familiar to many of our immigrant groups that they're able to grow here. And it's a really nice way to add cultural diversity to your cuisine, as well as and support local beginning and immigrant farmers. And it just makes it all the more interesting. I mean, think about cilantro. Cilantro probably wasn't in our I mean, repertoire for, I mean,
no.
not when I was
no,
growing up.
No, when I was
a kid. But now, some people say it's just it's too much cilantro. But it's that idea that an herb or maybe a vegetable could come in and really change the cuisine, but it's probably borrowed from another place, and that makes it, I think, really fun and interesting.
Talking today with Allie Burlow, and lots of callers online, and I hope you'll stay online, Anne and Anna and Waldo and Mary and Eau Claire and the other callers. We will be taking a quick look at the news and weather here, but stay with us because I'm certainly interested in what you have to comment on. And if you're thinking about commenting, you can do it too. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with Allie Burlow. You stay with us. If you live in a community where healthy, fresh food is easy to find, and if you know what to do with that food once you have it, you're pretty fortunate. Sadly, there are communities that are facing many hurdles, and a weak food system can be one of the most challenging to address. Larry Miller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest, Allie Burlow, has a lot of great advice to share in this area. She's the author of a couple of books. The one we're zeroing in on today is The Food Activist Handbook, Big and Small Things You Can Do to Help Provide Fresh, Healthy Food for Your Community. She was born and raised in Wisconsin, Madison, as a matter of fact. She's now living on the East Coast with her family, but she's in the state to do some great book events this week. And, Allie, thanks again for spending time with us.
Oh, it's a delight.
We have lots of callers online, but one open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. And I want to go to Ann in Waldo, who had been waiting a bit. So, Ann, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, how are you, Allie and Larry? Great topic today. Just great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to tell you that I've had an organic garden now for 25 years, and, you know, in the spring when you start, you know, setting your seeds up and the plants come up, and you plant all this stuff. And by the time August rolls around, you have more than you can use. So I have a little stand on the corner of my property, and I just put my produce out there with the honor system, and they just donate whatever they want. So that's how I help my community out up here in Waldo.
Wonderful.
That is that's a great idea. So if you can afford, if people can't afford very much or can't afford anything, you're fine with that as well, Ann.
Right. Because, you know, by the time the harvest comes, you have so much. And I do all heirloom products. I just absolutely love them. The tomatoes are just fantastic, the varieties and colors. But again, I like your show. Let's let someone else talk. We'll talk. Have a great afternoon.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Yeah.
You know, why not?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that might be the first time somebody actually tastes an heirloom variety tomato, and maybe they'll save those seeds and continue on for their garden or their kitchen garden.
I've got some wonderful heirlooms of my own growing, and that's not a bad. You know, sometime if I have a table or a little chair or something that I'm not really going to use anymore, I put it right out by the street, and it's gone, usually within a couple of hours. Why not do the same thing with some of that produce?
Absolutely. Or why not use our public spaces and grow food
there?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary and Eau Claire, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering, what to do since you written a handbook for about food. Last January, I was reading in the Eau Claire paper that some of the people at the local community table, which feeds anybody who comes, that they had started noticing their people had teeth problems, and then they figured out the problem with the teeth was scurvy. And so I'm thinking, well, what do you do in midwinter? And my God, scurvy. I mean,
yeah, it's and of course it's a lack of vitamin C.
Right. You know, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to try to prescribe anything like that. But, you know, perhaps looking at those overages of your cabbages and beans and beets that come in the late summer and the fall, and putting those up or fermenting them and having those types of vegetables available for your community food table. And perhaps also passing on that knowledge of how to can and how to preserve and how to ferment, like sauerkraut, you know, throughout the community. That may help diversify the diet.
Mm-hmm. And apples.
Apples, yeah, they keep...
Which
more often than not, but okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And that's kind of sad to know that in this day and age, there should no one should be suffering from...
Yeah, right.
...from that. Terrible issue. Jake in South Milwaukee, up to you now. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Good afternoon, Larry and Allie. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Allie, I'm afraid I haven't read your book yet. I was wondering if there's anything in there about the ugly foods movement and if you have any advice for somebody who might like to try to start something locally.
Right. Well, for our listeners that are not familiar with the ugly foods movement, really, it is what it is. It is what it says. Looking to buy and to use those foods that are not the most picture-perfect things that we see in the grocery store all the time. Diversifying probably also the types of food that you're growing. Would you agree with that, Jake? Does that sound right to you? Yep. So... my book was in press as this ugly foods movement really came into its own, as I feel like it's doing. But I also feel that fits really nicely into the gleaning movement, which is actually through time, if you look at it starting from the biblical times, which is farmers, if you read it literally, are commanded to leave food in the fields for the less fortunate in the communities. And in our country, it's said that we waste 96 billion pounds of food pre-consumer that could go to the consumer. And now that food may not be perfect, as in the ugly foods movement. So starting a gleaning program, Jake, is something that I would definitely encourage you to look into.
And you do have advice for starting programs,
yes.
So which I in your book, which I think,
yeah,
would be very helpful.
Yeah, exactly. And and the Society of St. Andrews is a national organization that also may have, if you look at their website, there may be something in and around Milwaukee already. Mm-hmm. And you know, I always love the ugly foods movement Facebook pages. They post the funniest pictures of vegetables. I found a strawberry that looked like a chicken, you know, which I was particularly fond of. So, but you know, encouraging people to buy those tomatoes that aren't perfect, the things that may be bruised, and going out into the fields, developing a relationship with a farmer or a number of farms to get those gleaned vegetables, which may be less than perfect.
And thank you very much for calling. And I think we should go back to this because I really didn't ask you this question, but talk about how your book is organized. I think it's organized really great.
Yeah, thank you. Well, it really is organized, you know, my husband jokes, like the manual for a car. You know, you look up something in the back and you say, what's wrong with the food system here? You know, how do I start a farm to school program? How do I, you know, what is a food hub? Things like that. So it's built upon for people to follow also their passions or their interests. In my case, you know, I came into food not just wanting to create access for my family, but also animal welfare was a particular issue that I'm very mm-hmm. passionate about. But perhaps it's about, you know, you're seeing land get taken up by development in and around Wisconsin, and you think, you know, what is going on with the farm succession programs? How can I protect this land? How do I help my neighbor protect their farm? What is the succession program? So maybe there's an event or there's something that you're observing, and you can go into the chapters. They're all from education to speak out to cook to connect. Building good organizations, nonprofit organizations that are supporting the good food movement. So it's
and with
really
a lot of good examples in there, I think too. And I like your section on you can do this, where you very straightforward. Exactly. Here's what you need to do.
Exactly, you can do this. So. Look, you know, maybe that's about bringing interfaith discussions about your food. I just opened up my book to page 183, and then there, so you can do this. You know, mentoring veterans or returning veterans from war. Great, great programs to bring back the vets and heal and help with their food, sometimes food-related issues, stress-related issues. So there's just a lot in there, and I really encourage people to look at it and just let the book fall open to whatever page it is and see what's there.
Yeah, and you have a site, of course, website and so forth, and we have a link to it on our Facebook page, but give that for us.
So my site is aliberlow.com, A-L-I. Berlow, B-E-R-L-O-W.com. And the book is available at independent bookstores, gift stores, feed stores.
Yeah, all over the place.
All over the place. And online resources as well, if that works for you.
Margaret in Milwaukee, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, this is my second call. I have a question this time. I had a comment earlier. And my question, I go to a small church on the south side of Milwaukee, and we happen to own a pretty large property. It's about 4 acres right in the Menominee Valley, and we are going to rehab a building there, but we don't really even have money to do the basic rehab. And I think it's incredibly important that we will have a kitchen that will meet all codes to be an industrial kitchen if we want to teach classes, have, any kind of, food kitchen or soup kitchen if that's the route we go, or to cater weddings if people in the congregation want to have it there. And I just think that I will probably end up being in charge of figuring out how to do that. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for ways to fundraise or grants to try to apply for, or places to go to that might be looking to get rid of, their industrial dishwasher, to try to meet that need.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, way to go. And what I would say is identify the goals of what you're trying to accomplish. Look at, talk to your church, your congregants, your community members that may be interested in participating in this, and really think through what it is that you want this to be. And I would also suggest starting small and building upon those steps. I think frequently we try to do too much too quickly. So start, once you've decided what your mission is really with this community kitchen, to go commercial, to be able to teach, maybe it's just, whatever that is, but really think about that. And then also involve your local and state regulatory agencies, local boards of health, perhaps it's, maybe it's the Environmental Protection Agency, whatever it is, and identify it in Wisconsin and locally in your community, because you got to work with the regulators, and we got to worry, food safety and all these things. And you may bump up against some regulations, but that same thing happened to me when we built a mobile poultry slaughterhouse. You can imagine we bumped up against some regulations there. And I always recommend persistence and politeness, but persistence, because if you're looking at regulations that are shutting you down, maybe also we can look at the regulations to encourage these businesses and these community kitchens, because they are important in order to provide this access to fresh, healthy foods for everybody. So that's my beginning stages. In terms of funding, once you've decided, once you've kind of figured out and narrowed down what it is and your first steps with your stakeholders and your group, then I think you can look at funding. And, the government, the cavalry is not coming to save us. We really need to look locally, look to local businesses, local community members, I think, and then strategize in terms of how you maybe match those dollars with state or federal funding. But I would be strategic and start small, and go to page 275 of my book for more information.
There you go, Margaret. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call there. And believe me, they're having some experience with this in our own school, where I'm the president of the school board, and the church is. And the kitchen issues are are a lot of things that local ordinances you have to really pay attention to.
Yeah, and you know, again, those there are probably some really good reasons, but there's also a lot of outdated or oversized regulations out there, and you know, it's time that I think we work together with the regulators in order to change that.
Thanks again, Margaret. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Do you have an experience to share? Questions to ask about your own community or your own organizations? I'd love to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234. I had a caller from Appleton who said, one of the keys to this issue is education. We need to teach the kids in our schools to buy local and grow their own gardens, so the habit becomes solid and is passed on to generations. And you deal with that in your book.
Absolutely. I think that farm to school is kind of that catch-all that the caller's question and comment relates to. And that's a national movement. Some places stronger than others, but really it addresses that, and I agree that addressing this at a young age, preschool age, getting kids outside into the gardens, familiar with where their food comes from, having them participate in the growing of it, the taste testing of it, all of these things can be really powerful learning and teaching experiences. And to make farm-to-school programs, I think, really, really gain traction, if you look at connecting the community of local growers as well as the curriculums. So you really have the three C's, and I take this, I didn't make this up, this comes from the Vermont Feed Organization on the East Coast: curriculum, classroom, and community. And if you can gain, you know, elements of that in a farm-to-school program, I think you really can. It's really part of the sea change.
Yeah, you have so many great examples of models that are working really well around the country in your book, and you want to talk about a few of those. I know there's examples, school cafeterias or farmers markets or composting, education of adults and children. So all those areas you have.
Yeah. You know, one of the latest buzzwords now in the USDA nomenclature is, you know, food hubs. And these are places that really farmers and eaters, it's a place to bring in the aggregation and the storage and the production of our food, and then to be able to distribute it out into the community. And down in New Mexico, there's some really interesting work happening down there. And you think about the different challenges to that environment. The actual geography and that's pretty inspiring work. And those things, too, are not necessarily, you know, a lot of these solutions are not cookie cutter. You're not going to be able to take something
right.
that works in New Mexico or in Vermont and make it exactly work for you in wherever you are. But I think what it does do is say, you know, really look at your locale, really know your community, and ask, who is included in the good food, who isn't, and why, and what is the history of that, and how can you make it better? So that's been one of the food hubs are really interesting, I think. Other programs, boy, there's just so many. I really fell in love with aquaponics.
And it's a nice conversation about aquaponics. And remember you saying, well, you know, you could probably put one together in your basement, but really, if you're going to make it work, it's actually going to cost you some money.
Yeah, it's going to cost a little bit of money. But, you know, if you don't have a lot of land, and in these days of climate change, when weather is completely unpredictable, if you can have controlled environment agriculture situation within a greenhouse, and then you get not just the fresh produce, but then you also get, you know, the protein of a fish. I mean, it's just incredible. And I'll actually be in Montello, Wisconsin on Saturday morning at the Nelson and Pate Aquaponics Greenhouse talking about that. But and I know in Wisconsin it's wonderful how many aquaponics farms
there are.
A
lot of them.
There's
and
a
you
lot
use,
of them.
You cite one in Hayward, Wisconsin, which I haven't been to. North Star Homestead Farms.
Homestead Farms, right. And then, you know, so whether you're in an urban area or a rural area. And again, one thing I also find interesting about aquaponics is the regulators don't quite know where to fit it. You know, is it mm-hmm. is it a greenhouse? Is it a fish farm? Is it a farming, you know, operation? And to me, those are exciting times. It's like, well, let's really dig in here and figure out what this is. And I think it's the UW-Stevens Point is doing a lot of work in that area, and actually has aquaponics program for great standards.
They have a great program.
Yeah. So I find in Wisconsin that, and hopefully that the aquaponics will, you know, continue, because it's really efficient and clean food, and I just love the fact that you get both protein and produce. So
it's a wonderful
yeah.
system there. And I
yeah.
and you mentioned Book Talk, which reminded me that you have some signings and some talks coming up Friday the 17th, which is this Friday.
Yep.
You're at the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which in and of itself is a great place to visit.
I can't wait. I cannot wait to be there. I'll be there for a lunchtime talk starting at noon. And talk about land ethic and agriculture. I mean, it's just so exciting.
Oh, that's going to be – and that's open to the public?
That's open to the public. That's right.
So 12 to 1:30 on Friday, July 17th at the Aldo Leopold Foundation, then from 9 to 10 – book signing and talk at Nelson and Pate, which you mentioned, the greenhouse classroom in Montello.
Montello, yeah. And then Sunday I'll be at Cluck and Paoli.
Cluck the Chicken Store. Cluck the Chicken Store folks are great supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio, as a matter of fact.
That's terrific. Yeah, I'll be there from 4 to 6. And the proceeds from the book sales at Cluck will be going to the REAP food group, the food project here in Southern Wisconsin. So that will be really fun. And then I squeezed in another one, Larry.
Oh, you did?
I did. So tomorrow at 6 o'clock, I'll be at the Driftless Studio up here on State Street.
In Madison.
In Madison. Yeah, which is right on the cusp of the Maxwell Street days, right?
Yeah.
So that will be a good one. So that's at 6 o'clock tomorrow.
So that's tomorrow.
Yes.
At 6. And mm-hmm. again, it's at the...
The Driftless Studio.
The Driftless Studio.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, Allie. I thank you so much for being with us today to talk about your book. And I'm learning plenty as I read through it, and I know our listeners will as well. So thank you again so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Allie Burlow, she actually has a couple of books out. The one is titled The Mobile Poultry Slaughterhouse, Building a Humane Chicken Processing Unit to Strengthen Your Local Food System, forward by Temple Grandin, who has been a guest on this show more than once. And her latest book that we're talking about, The Food Activist Handbook, Big and Small Things You Can Do to Help Provide Fresh, Healthy Food for Yourself and for your Community. Wonderful to have her with us, and likely we'll have her back. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Darren Bush of Rutabaga Paddle Sports. And, you know, it's that time of the year to get the canoe out or whatever it is you've got and get on the water. That's coming up tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.